6 never, ever marks the spot.
I am altering the deep. Pray I don't alter it any further.
Most of the intelligence community doesn't believe he exists. The ones that do call him the Winter Soldier.
I'm Batman.
Dracarys.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of the Top 5 Report, the podcast that has seen enough movies to know that popping the back of a raft makes it go faster. My name is Drew. I'll be your host for the evening. Along with me, as always, is my brother, Peter. How are you, sir?
I'm here. How are you?
I'm fine. It's been a busy week. I wish I had more to tell you I watched, but I do have stuff that I watched.
Well, I just had to laugh because your opening joke there, like just the amount of visuals going through my head is just cracking me up. So you made me stop in my tracks a little bit.
Oh, cool. All right. Yeah, well, you know, popping the back of a raft does make it go faster.
Absolutely.
So, at any rate, how was your week, man?
It's been busy, hectic, but yeah, I'm happy to be here and talking about fun stuff. But yeah, it's just, for me, the trend lately is just extreme busyness. So hopefully that calms down a bit soon enough so I can watch and read some more stuff. How about you?
Yeah, I wish I had more time to watch / read stuff. I've actually been doing a bunch of D&D prep, which is really good.
Cool.
Well, it's interesting because I was trying to keep... So I have my adult group and I have the kid group that I run. And they were both in the same universe, right? I was running them both in Exandria, which is the Critical Role universe for like Vox Machina and the Mighty Nein and stuff. And I was doing it only there because I'm a fan of them. So I was just kind of using their world. And when I say using their world, maps and names of cities, honestly, that's it. The rest I make up as I go. The occasional faction, or government thing for sure, just because of, you know, continuity sake. But other than that, I'm kind of ignoring anything else that they did. I'm like, you know, that kind of stuff.
That's fair. But, I will say, just I'll throw in there, like I've played D&D where, you know, DMs will like go do like a by the book campaign, like where they'll do everything by the book, but you can't understate the amount of even just doing that, like the amount of creativity you actually have to have when it comes to like the ad-libbing with the random like NPCs you talk to and just like all the bonkers stuff that goes on. So not to downplay like somebody who's doing like a very by the book campaign, but no, keep going.
No, well, I like to create my own story, right? And right. That's one of my favorite parts about it. I like to create my own story, my own dungeons, my own puzzles, the whole nine. But half of the homework is like literally half of the homework is the maps, the city names, all that stuff. So when you look at the lore that Dungeons and Dragons has created, whether it's the Critical Role, Exandria stuff, or you look at Forgotten Realms or Eberron or some of these other like known universes, Barovia, that kind of stuff, you get a map with like a whole bunch of names of cities and locations and towns and rivers and street names and, you know, that kind of stuff. And you could be like, well, crap, all that half of the homework is done. I can make up the rest. Right.
Right. Yeah.
And that's kind of like what I like doing. I do know that like, for example, I mentioned the town of Whitestone, and one of my players goes, have we ever heard that before? And I go, well, you as a player has. As a character, you've at the very least heard of the you probably would have heard of the plight of the Briarwoods, right? Because you're in that world and that was a huge thing. So that kind of reference I like to make, but I try and stay away from the Critical Role stuff because I don't want to step on the toes of their continuity because my players have made so many changes, it's kind of become our own thing, right? My kids, however, decided they finished their campaign and they want it. And I go, do you guys want to stay in Exandria? You want to do something else? And like, we want to do Forgotten Realms. And I'm like, okay. Not that that's a bad thing. It's more of the, I now have to create a campaign in two different universes. So my D&D prep is just keeping it, a lot of it's like note taking because it's two different campaigns and two different universes. So I got to be like, okay, I'm over in Exandria in this game. And then I got to run over and I'm in Forgotten Realms in this game. So it's two different things. And yeah, so Forgotten Realms is the, Forgotten Realms is the most popular and well-known area of the Dungeons and Dragons universe, I believe. I think it's the most, well, most documented too, I believe. So not 100% there.
I feel like that's the case. Also, like, I don't know if they're still publishing them, but I know there's like a ton of like just novels set within Forgotten Realms. Like you go to any bookstore and in like the sci-fi fantasy section, there's just like shelves and shelves of Forgotten Realms books. And of course you have like the Dragonlance books, for example, are like a similar, you know, series and stuff like that. But I feel like just the published novels also helps with Forgotten Realms being such a, such a well-known setting in Dungeons and Dragons. So I think you're right, but balancing the two different settings for both of your campaigns does sound daunting. And I'm over here, I've never DM'd, so I can't imagine how much work and effort that is, you know.
it's a ton of work, and I love every minute of it. That's the crazy part.
That's awesome.
But yeah, so there's that. And then, so I've been doing a lot of that, honestly. And it's, you know, the nice part though is the kid game, I can do a puzzle in the kid game and I can use, like, I can be like, oh, you enter the dungeon, and I can make it the exact same dungeon I run the adults through. Maybe I change some details to make it fit the different worlds, but ultimately I can use the same puzzles and the same traps on both games. So sometimes I'll try stuff with the kids specifically to see how it goes before I try it with the adults and vice versa.
Yeah.
So you're just like, ooh, the kids did it this way. Let's see what the adults do. You know, nice. So I have a lot of fun with that. So. Same thing with like riddles. I did and earlier in the campaign, I had a riddle that was based on Latin text. And the adults were like, what does that mean? They were literally baffled, whatever. They tried to figure it out and then they passed it away. When I did it for the kids, several of them were like, oh, I know what that is. That's Latin. It means the following. And yep. Okay. We'll do. All right. That changes our direction. Let's do this first. And I was like, whoa. So that kind of blew me away a little bit, but, and then I rubbed it in my awesome. Adults' faces. So yeah. Anyway,
that's pretty great. One enough. Of those, like, are you smarter than a fifth grader moments, but it's kind of cool that you're getting like a good cross section of like the entire D&D fan base with like just the age difference between both of your games there. So that's pretty cool.
Yeah. One of these days, man, I got to get you to the table, whether it's for a one shot or actually to sit in as a guest on the campaign or something like that. I got to do it.
Awesome.
what moving on though, no one wants to sit and listen to me talk about Dungeons and Dragons all night. Well, I bet someone does, but I'm
I think
sure.
That's why they're here, to be honest.
They are. That's exactly why they're here. Anyway, what did you watch this week, man?
Yeah, I can keep it pretty short. One thing I've been doing, I had this weird idea, and I don't know if I'm going to actually do this, but so for Halloween this year, my wife has said she was at the thrift store, and she found like these black angel wings that she thought was cool. And so she's gotten into her head that she wants to be the Angel of Death version of Peyton from One Tree Hill, which is a pretty great costume. And I don't know if I should be a One Tree Hill character, but I can't think of like any like male counterparts to that that's like as cool. But my Lucas. Wife and I rarely ever. Yeah, I know. One of my coworkers said I should be the goth version of Lucas that was in the there's like the weird goth chick who has like that episode after the shooting episode, and she has like this weird like goth version of Lucas. That's what my coworker suggested I should be, but I don't know if I'm feeling that. And my wife and I rarely have matching Halloween costumes because we can never agree on anything. So I think I might just be some sort of dark character.
You want to do a couple's costume? Well, we're not ready for that level of commitment.
It's not bad. We can never come up with a matching costume. And the other thing is, a lot of couples costumes is like you have one character who looks really cool and one character who's kind of boring. So like it'll be like, you know, like the female character will be like some crazy costume and then the guy character is kind of just like a normal dude, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. We did do a matching costume last year. We were Beetlejuice and Lydia. So we've done it before, but since she's going to be this Dark Angel character and nobody's going to know who it is, I think I just might be some sort of dark gothy sort of character. And I had the idea that
The Crow.
Okay, I was thinking more generic because everybody's like, oh, she's just a dark angel. So I was thinking more generic, and I don't know if I'm going to do this, but I have the idea that I think I might just buy one of those dark jester costumes. Okay. And the reason why I want to do this is because I can double dip and use that costume at the Renaissance Fair next summer. So that's kind of my mindset. Like, if I get a good enough jester, I can use it at the Ren Fair later on and save money overall. So what I've been doing in my free time this past week is I actually took up juggling. So I've been doing that for like 10 to 15 minutes a day, just practicing juggling. So that's been fun. Not pop culture related, but nerdy as hell. So nope, I thought I'd bring it up.
That's quite awesome. I was just going to say the other another costume, which would be really fun, which would not require you to have to learn juggling and being able to reuse at the Ren Fair is, what if you did like a plague doctor? That'd be awesome. You really just need the mask and then you can go from there and then it's all accessorizing after that. You know what I mean? Plague Doctor would be really cool. So
I was debating doing a Plague Doctor at the Renaissance Fair this past summer, and I just didn't put the wheels in motion like soon enough. I didn't get all the pieces together, but at the very basics, you need a cloak and a Plague Doctor mask. That's mm-hmm. pretty easy. So that is something I've always had like in my wheelhouse. Like I could totally do a plague doctor. And oddly enough, you don't see a lot of those at the Ren Fair. So I don't know why that is, but I mean, it's an easy costume to pull off. Yeah, so
it is. That'd be cool. So you didn't really watch anything, huh?
No, I was getting to that. I was just mentioning I have this nerdy juggling pursuit, which, again, I don't have to do. I just think if I'm going to dress as a jester, I got to have, like, a couple jester tricks up my sleeve. Otherwise, you're just, like, a poser who can't, like, juggle or do any special tricks. You know what I mean? I don't want to be a poser jester. But otherwise, the only other thing I've really watched, which I've been really bad at keeping up with pop culture and relevant things, and my one bit of watching and reading this week definitely plays into that, because my wife and I started watching Supernatural, the CW show that started 20 years ago, actually, in 2005. And she's actually watched this through a couple times. But I've mentioned on the show before, we switch back and forth with TV shows, right? So it started with she chose One Tree Hill and we watched all through that. So then it was my turn. And I chose Cobra Kai, and we watched through that, and we loved it. And then now it went back to her, and she chose Supernatural. Now,
which the problem is 15 seasons, I think.
Yes. And the problem is.
And they're 20 episoders, aren't they?
Yes. She's picking these massive series, and I'm just like, you know, I should have gotten like one or two extra like short TV shows that we could have watched or something like that. So yeah, that the balance with that is going to have to be resolved as time goes on. But what I can say is I'm about 5 episodes into Supernatural, and I've heard the show gets better as it goes. Like it takes a bit to find its legs, but I actually really enjoy it. Like the special effects aren't the greatest. Like this came out in 2005. It has a TV show budget, but so far, I'm really enjoying it. It's like every episode is like a mini, like it's a procedural show, at least where I'm at. It's very procedural feeling. Like each episode has like the weird supernatural mystery that needs to be solved. But it's like a cool mix between a procedural and like a mini like horror movie, like every episode. So I'm thinking it's pretty cool. And from what I've heard, the special effects just get better and better and the stories get better and better. So I'm enjoying this quite a bit, but I'm going to be in the long haul for this one, and I'm going to have to be trying to catch up on stuff like Peacemaker and Alien Covenant, you know, in between when I find a time. So it's a struggle, but Supernatural is pretty fun. I don't know. Did you ever watch this show, Drew? Do you have any thoughts on Supernatural?
I did not watch it. Not that I didn't want to watch it, but the time that someone had told me to watch it, I think they were already like 10 seasons in, and I was I'm like, that's a commitment right now. And it just, when someone brought it to my attention, it was more of a, I don't have time for that in my life at the moment. So I've just never had a chance to sit down and watch it.
And will, a bad will show, you but. Will you ever have time to watch it? That's the question. But so far, I am really digging it. So it's not one of those things where I'm not going to give my review of Supernatural every week, because that's going to be very daunting and slow. But, you know, maybe once when I hit certain milestones or I finish the series, like maybe I'll give updates as far as that goes. But gotcha. Yeah, for me, that's it for watching this week. How about you?
OK, well, how about this? In the realm of me reading through every bit of Detective Comics, every issue of Detective Comics, and every issue of Batman from like the dawn of time to current, I am through Hush. That's where I'm at on both titles.
Oh, okay. Nice.
So I'm into the 2006, 2007, right around that time frame. Because that's right about the time Hush like dropped. So that's from 1938 to 2007. That's a lot of reading. But I've gotten that far. That
report, we're reporting on all the most relevant stuff. I know. The 2000s.
Well, this is the daunting task of reading through all of that. And it's the mile, it's the achievement that I want to say I did it. You know what I mean? And then, so, you know, and what's really been interesting is the evolution of the comic book. Right. So that's cool. I know I've mentioned Stargate, and I know that's kind of like my falling asleep show. However, I've watched through, that's another daunting one. It's like Supernatural, where it's got like 17 seasons and a couple movies. Right. The one thing is that at the end, Stargate did, when they did their final series, Stargate Universe, it's all interlaced. There's a lot of crossover stuff. But when they got to that final series, it got cut short by ratings, which is fine. They did try and close it in a way, but they closed it in a way that you're like, oh man, we're never going to find out what happened with the, you know what I mean? Like that kind of a thing. So even though like it's a bittersweet ending, if you will. However, I remember not enjoying it when I first watched it. Now, I say that because when I started watching it, when I started watching Stargate, it was technically all done. There was no live television for me to watch. It was all, I was watching it on like DVDs and stuff. So I wasn't getting any commercials. There was no breaks. There was no week to week anything. So when I got to Stargate Universe and I was like, oh, the new Stargate's starting, we should watch it, I had to contend with commercials and week to week.
Yeah.
And I felt like the commercial breaks dropped so much of the emotional weight, so much of the intensity, so much of the story. And then I had to wait a week for another episode of, oh, here we go, and drop the weight, drop the like intensity. Like everything was broken by the commercials. And that's why I pay a lot of money to not watch commercials. But what I'm finding now is I'm at the Stargate Universe part of my watching through Stargate thing. And the show, and now I'm watching it with no commercials, and I can binge it, and it's fantastic. It is way better than I remember it, and it's way better than I gave it credit for back in the day. I used to be like, oh, here's the misstep. You know, everything's great except for this little pocket of the franchise. No. This is just as good. They did change some things in terms of, like, there's some camera techniques that are a little different. The way they frame their shots are definitely a little different if you're one of those like camera nerds like I am, where it's like, oh, I noticed the filming changed. But it's Stargate and it's way better than I remember, which is really cool. So I'm having a lot of fun with it. I'm going to get to the end and be like, oh, bummed out because of how I remember how good the ending was. But that's okay. So that's been kind of fun because where I'm at with that little like falling asleep rewatch project. And I'm not falling asleep through it. That's the show I watch before I go to bed. Right. Mm-hmm. The other thing that I watched was Alien Earth episode 7. And you're killing me that you haven't touched it yet. The show continues to be amazing. It continues to wow me on all levels. And I can't say much more because it's like, there's the time when I finish an episode, I'm like, we have to talk about this. and I can't wait for you to do it. And I think because of the length of Supernatural, I think you should be able to talk your wife into, we need to get we need to squeeze Alien in before we go any farther. It's only 8 episodes. You know right. what I mean? Get to the mid-season Christmas break and go, hey, we're watching a 15 minute. You got to throw me a bone on this, 'cause I have a podcast to do. And you know,
yeah.
So,
but I did say, like, once Stranger Things comes out, like, we have to stop and watch that. But, no, Alien Earth, I am going to try to fit that in soon. It's just, it's honestly just dropped at, like, a horrible time for me, where I've just had, like, nothing but commitments yeah. lately. So it's been
it.
Really hard to catch up. But
I
also
it, it's fall
don't,
TV time.
The one thing I will say is, like, we're on a podcast, and I don't want to leave the audience hanging, though, Drew. So if you did want to talk about some specifics or mild spoilers, like, go ahead. Like, I don't want to keep the listeners hanging, you know?
So here's the thing. The alien stuff gets cooler and cooler. Like, the xenomorph part of it gets cooler and cooler. The other creatures get grosser and scarier and amazing. The eyeball is probably one of my favorite creatures ever created in all of science fiction ever. And I can't wait to see where that gets taken in the final episode of the season. Because it is, I've never seen a creature like this level of disgusting. And then what it does when it takes a host, and then the creepy sheep, and you'll understand when you watch it, but it is crazy. But dude, this eyeball thing is awesome. Then, some of these other, like,
the creepy sheep was not a phrase I was expecting. So keep going.
Hey, you gotta watch the show to know what I'm talking about, man. And yeah. you'll be like, whoa. And it's nuts. Like, when you see this sheep and it's just kind of staring at you, you're just like, what is, yeah, it's awesome. You gotta see it. It's fantastic. But yeah, it is incredibly gross. It's incredibly, like, it's, dude, I've been saying it every single week. They understood the assignment. I'm afraid that if I say anything more, it's going to, like, and I know you say free reign, do what you got to do, talk about it. Yeah. But I kind of want to, like, hey, when you are ready to talk, we can. All I want to say is massive 2 thumbs up. Everyone needs to go see this. Everyone needs to sit down and watch Alien Earth because it's fantastic. Anyway.
Nice.
So that brings me to the end of my watching and reading. Unless you watched the trailers that dropped.
I know I watched at least one of them, I'm assuming, okay. But right. Keep going. Yeah.
Well, they released. So for starters, and I doubt you did, but Critical Role did a trailer for their new campaign. So their campaign 4, which is about to start, and that starts October 2nd, which is kind of cool. I'm really excited to see that. Then there's a trailer for Netflix's Splinter Cell animated television series.
No, I have not watched this yet. I'm
which
horrible.
Looks amazing. Michael Ironside is the actor who had voiced Sam Fisher for all the video games. And when I was watching the trailer, I'm like, this doesn't sound like Michael Ironside. And then it says that it's Liv Schreiber, which that's cool. I have no problem with the change of the voice actor. I just was like, this doesn't sound like him. And it doesn't sound bad. It was just, I knew it wasn't Michael Ironside. Someone pointed out to me in a conversation that, you know, a lot of times it doesn't matter how old they get. You can always have them voice the characters. And I'm like, well, it's not entirely true. Sometimes you can have, I mean, like, look at Val Kilmer. He had throat cancer and couldn't talk. Sometimes when you get older, your voice at certain points in your life, your voice does change even when you get to those older ages. So there's a chance that Michael Ironside doesn't sound like him anymore. And they wanted to go with a younger actor to cover the gambit of it. But this does look like, from the trailer, it looks like an old man Sam Fisher kind of a story, which that's cool. I'm down. It looks great. I'm really excited to see it because I'm a big fan of the Splinter Cell games. However, because the two counterpart things, you have Splinter Cell and Metal Gear Solid. And watching the Splinter Cell trailer, it's Tom Clancy, so it's very real world, right? Metal Gear Solid, I think, because it has more of a anime feel,
yeah.
And that's the best way of wording it. I feel like that would almost lend it to the animated world better because of, like, the crazy characters like Psycho Mantis and Revolver Ocelot and, you know, Sniper Wolf and, you know, that kind of a world and then throw in the Metal Gear itself, like that sounds more anime or animated. Like,
yeah,
I feel like that's your better route, but whatever. I'm not the guy in the writer room.
I mean, Metal Gear Solid 2 had a, one of the villains was like a vampire. So like Metal Gear Solid isn't afraid to get like fantastical at certain points. So I think that's a good way to point. That's a good thing to point out. Metal Gear Solid, the anime, when are we getting it? I don't know, but, we'd all be watching that, you know what I mean?
So. Right. And then did you watch the trailer for Anaconda?
Yes, this is the one I did.
Because to me, that was the big one. What do you think of the trailer for Anaconda?
Well, with the two other projects you just talked about having trailers for, I feel like Anaconda shouldn't be the big one. It is the big budget Hollywood production. This is a weird trailer because I don't necessarily know what to think. Part of me feels like this is the result of a writer's room. Like, people in a writer's room being like, crap, we have to remake Anaconda. What do we do? And they probably started off with, like, a traditional remake, you know? Like, they started writing down, like, you know, what can we do? Like, what kind of characters can we have? And they probably were just like, this is boring. And then somebody had the crazy idea, like, well, what if it's about two guys trying to remake the original Anaconda movie? And so they go to do that, and then everything goes wrong, and then they get attacked by a real anaconda, and it seems kind of crazy in that way, where it's almost like writer's room people just trying to make this project exciting for them to work on. But with that being said, it does look bonkers. It looks batshit. It looks super entertaining. So I'm really excited for this one. It just seems so random and bizarre when you actually think
it about also,
what the plot is on paper. You know what I mean?
On paper, it's hilarious. And I like when like one of our brothers said, there's an Anaconda reboot coming. Now, you and I knew about this because we had mentioned it a long time ago when it got announced. I'm like, yeah, that's not a new thing. But he was like, reboot. And I'm like, well, it's not really a reboot. Like, it's a whole different movie. Like, it's really not a reboot. It's not a requel. It's not a sequel. It's not a, you know, like, it's a whole movie in and of itself. And it just happens to, like, the subject matter, I think, is the reboot part, you know? So it's a very, I think it's kind of a meta film, if you will, but it looks fantastic on all the silly, crazy levels that it could possibly be. And the fact that essentially, like, we're going to remake Anaconda, but then they're going to end up actually making Anaconda. Like, you know, like, that's the crazy, it's got this meta in and of itself kind of a feel.
Yeah. So. It is meta is a good thing to point out because it is kind of in a weird way, like, I guess it's a reboot slash sequel, but it is a meta thing where they're remaking this movie. It kind of, and this is going to sound ridiculous, it kind of reminds me of Nightmare on Elm Street 7, where Nightmare on Elm Street 7 is about like the main actress from the original Nightmare on Elm Street, but Freddy's in the real world, like, haunting the dreams of this actress who played Nancy in the original Nightmare on Elm Street. And it's this weird meta thing, like, wait, did the stuff in the movie happen? Wait, is the stuff in this movie happening, sort of thing? So, yeah, Anaconda, the Nightmare on Elm Street 7 of giant snake movies, I guess.
Yeah, well, I don't know. I don't know, the trailer looks cool, so there you go.
Yeah, absolutely. Plus, Paul Rudd and Jack Black, you can't go wrong with this one, you know? Whether it's a good movie or not, you know it's going to be hilarious and it's going to be entertaining. So there you go.
All right, news stories. Let's do the quick ones real quick. Tom Cruise is officially returning for Days of Thunder 2. I'm not surprised. I think that was kind of a no-brainer, especially after you think of the success of Top Gun, and then you look at the success of Formula or F1, and then Tom Cruise is like, hey, we're doing Days of Thunder, and then now you're just waiting for the crossover where Tom Cruise and Brad Pitt are getting in race cars together, you know?
In there too, why not?
Well, no, I was just gonna say they might be vampires when they do it too, and make that a weird trifecta of Interview with the Vampire.
Sure, sure, yeah. Why not?
Yeah. Anyway, that's awesome. Did you see the Mario announcement?
Yes. Trailer. Yes, I saw the teaser trailer.
Yeah. So Super Mario Galaxy movie. Did you ever play Super Mario Galaxy?
A bit. A bit. Not right. Like a ton, but like, yes, yes. I've played it a bit. I've seen, like I've had, like watched friends play it, like seen streams of it, but not like super deep into the playing it myself sort of thing. But yeah, go on.
I played way more than I expected to end up playing. And I am a little baffled by the idea that we're jumping straight to outer space. Like we're jumping straight to Galaxy. They covered a lot of ground with that first movie, but I didn't really know what was making another Mario Brothers movie. And you're just like, yeah, of course you're making another Mario Brothers movie. It was super successful. But at the same time, you're like, we're going straight to Mario Galaxy. That's crazy. I'm excited for it. I think it's going to be really cool. I think some of the visuals with the, depending on how they do like the planets and like him running around, like the gravity stuff could be really cool. Jumping from like maybe an asteroid to another asteroid, the way they handle that, that could be really sweet. So I'm excited. It's cool. So Mario Brothers Galaxy, the movie.
I was just going to say, I think it looks awesome. I think just related to what you're saying, like it is surprising they're going to space right away, but I just think of that first, the Super Mario Brothers movie. They had like everything in the kitchen sink in that movie. Like they had, you know, like Bowser, they had all the Easter eggs to the old plots. They had like multiple Mario Kart sequences. They had Donkey Kong. They had the Rainbow Road. They had like so much of all the Mario games from your childhood. It's almost like, what do we do next? So like, yeah, it is kind of surprising that they're going to space for the second movie. Most franchises save that for at least the third movie. but no, it's pretty cool. Like, it's kind of like, where do we go next? We had so much in this first movie. So it, in a weird way, it seems like a logical step. But this teaser trailer was perfect, you know, just from like it opening up and it just shows like Mario, like kind of like sleeping with his hat resting on his head, like leaning against a mushroom, and then kind of like goes through the mushroom kingdom and then just kind of into outer space. And the one thing I'll say about these Mario movies, and I think this is an underrated aspect, but one of the best parts about this, the first movie and then this new trailer, is the score.
Like, I knew you were going to say that.
Sounds incredible, but it's so great. It's so perfect.
And it is.
You're hearing this music from your childhood played with that orchestral movie soundtrack level thing. And it's just so cool. You know what I mean?
Not only you heard it in the trailer, and then like, and like when you hear the orchestral Mario theme within the trailer, I was like, I knew that when we got to this episode, you were going to say, did you hear the score? You know, I knew you were going to bring it up. It's awesome.
Well, I just remember the trailer for the first Mario movie. I don't remember what movie I saw in theaters, but I remember hearing that trailer and hearing that score, you know, on the big screen with the giant like movie theater speakers like blasting this in your face. And I did have a moment where like I almost did tear up, because I'm just like, man, just hearing this music played on such a grand scale, it really does pull at my heartstrings, you know, as a 90s kid. So yeah, great stuff. But yeah, there you go.
Yeah. All right. I don't know if this is actually true or not, so I'm going to put this out there as a possible rumor or one of those possible like AI things that like popped up on the internet, but it caught my attention. Heat 2 has officially been approved, with Michael Mann set to return as a director.
Interesting. Okay.
I know. So Leonardo DiCaprio is rumored to play a younger version of Al Pacino's character, while Adam Driver and Austin Butler will take on roles for Robert De Niro and Val Kilmer's younger characters. So like a heist thing with them earlier. So it's kind of like a prequel. Why it's not called Reheat, I don't know. Or Preheat.
Preheat.
Right. I'm not, but I just don't know if this is real or not. So take it with a grain of salt. I like the idea. I'm down. I also don't think that Heat should ever be touched again. Like, that movie is solid gold as is. It's amazing. And it's probably, when it's got the one of the greatest gunfights ever in the history of film at the end of it. Like, I don't care who you are. Every single person sees that movie. They want to be part of that gunfight at the end of the movie. But yeah, I just don't know, if this is real. So grain of salt. And that's what I'm going to say there. Yeah, unless you have anything to add to it, but grain of salt. So
I just wonder if this is a case of like, do we really need a sequel? And, I kind of think of like the Boondock Saints 2 or, like S Darko.
I like Boondock Saints 2.
Oh, you did? Okay. Well, yeah, fair enough. Well,
I actually enjoyed the second one quite a bit. It was not the first, but I enjoyed it.
Yeah, and that's fair. I guess I just think of like that or like S Darko, the Donnie Darko sequel.
That was not good.
And that's the thing is like these long awaited sequels for these critically acclaimed movies. A lot of times they don't live up to the hype. So that's what I'm worried about. But this is interesting, and the fact that you say it's a rumor or not confirmed or whatever, that's going to be interesting too, to just watch this unfold and see how it goes.
Yep. Yep. All right. Live action One Piece is going to be back on the screen real soon. Peter, that's another one that I think you need to watch because it's fantastic. But the live action One Piece season one was great. Season two, they released the trailer for it. It looks astounding. Like, it just makes me excited. But they did announce that they have planned for 12 seasons, as long as, so the creators of One Piece have revealed they plan to continue for 12 seasons, saying that during an interview, we have hopes for 12 seasons because there's so much material. The main actor, the actor who plays Luffy, has already said he is in it as long as they're willing to keep making the show. As long as the show is successful, I don't see why any actor wouldn't want to be in it. You know what I mean? Like, it's a job, right?
Sure.
So, but the new season looks fantastic. I can't wait. I look forward to it. You need to watch it.
Yeah. I'll get there.
I'll get there. Yep. All right.
I want to watch it. It's just One Piece is daunting, but I do think the live action is a good place to get into it. I guess I just haven't been in the mood for like a super like piratey sort of thing in a bit. So I'll get to it someday though.
Sure. Frozen 3 has been announced. I think we all knew that was coming. It will include Anna's wedding and a new addition to the family. Does that mean she's having a baby or is this something else? In this new chapter, witness the wedding of the century in Arendelle as Queen Anna walks down the aisle and joins Elsa on a magical new adventure filled with unknown challenges. And what's even more exciting, the royal family is about to welcome a mysterious new member. The mysterious part is what I like to make me think that it's not necessarily a child. So we shall see. Or they do the wedding part at the beginning and then they montage it and then the kid has crazy like powers. So there you go.
Yeah. I was kind of assuming something like that. So, yeah.
All right. Matt Reeves makes, sorry, I don't want to go through the news too fast, but I only got two more news stories for you. Matt Reeves had some Batman 2 comments. The villain has never been done in a movie before. Interesting. I have this itching feeling in the back of my neck that it's going to be Hush. That's honestly like would be absolutely amazing. And it would be perfect for the Batman mythos. And I don't mean the Batman mythos, like Batman as a character, but the Batman in terms of what Matt Reeves is doing, it just fits his version of Batman so well. So, yeah. The film pushes further into Bruce Wayne because the first one is so focused on Batman. So when you say a villain has never been seen before and it focuses and it's going to focus heavier on Bruce Wayne, that makes me think, again, Hush, because of the Hush storyline, just saying. And I don't want to say why the Hush is so important to the Bruce Wayne backstory, because it would ruin the movie if I laid it out right now. That's all I'm going to say. He has no idea if Batman 3 will happen. That's cool. And thinks it'd be a lot of fun to make a DCU project after he's done with the Batman saga. So when he's done with Batman saga, he wants to go over and chat with James Gunn and make a DC movie. I'm down. I like what Matt Reeves is doing over there.
Yeah.
So, yeah. It's just nice to get some nuggets for the Batman 2 because it's going to be a bit before we see it. But I'm telling you, man, 2027 is turning into a my wallet's going to hurt kind of a year.
worse than this year?
Much worse than this year. Like, it's bad. Like, you're just like, oh my God, this You have a Batman film, you have an Avengers film. I believe that's when the Mario movie releases. You have like, it's a lot. I believe that's when Spider-Man drops. I think that's when Superman 2 drops. Like this, I mean, it's going to be a monster of a year. Anyway, all right. This is my favorite news story of the night. I was so excited when I saw this. I'm just going to read it. This is the tweet that got posted from Disney Plus. It's time to play the music. It's time to light the lights. It's time to get things started as the Muppet Show returns for a triumphant event on Disney Plus in 2026 with guest star Sabrina Carpenter. It's a brand new installment from Muppet Studio. Point Grey Pictures will feature Kermit, Miss Piggy, Fozzie, Gonzo, and the gang as they return to the Muppet Theater to put on a variety show filled with music, comedy, and plenty of chaos. This sounds like a one-off Muppet Show. Let's do it again and do a Muppet Show. I'm hoping this is a kickoff to doing the Muppets all over again. Just my opinion. But I was so excited for this just because it's like, yes, let's do this. So, thoughts?
Yeah, something to be excited about. Definitely cool to see more Muppet stuff. It's kind of weird because it's one of those things where I want to say, like, if everybody goes and watches this and supports it, maybe we will get more Muppet stuff. But the fact that it's starring Sabrina Carpenter, you already know that the Sabrina Carpenter stans are going to be out in full force watching this thing. So I feel like it's going to be kind of hard to gauge whether the people watching this are like hardcore Muppets fans or are they hardcore
right.
Sabrina Carpenter fans. But either way, definitely something cool to look forward to. And the fact that they're advertising it as like a big event, like that seems pretty neat too. So,
yeah. So yeah, there you go. That brings us to the end of the news. Unless you have anything to add, do you want to, talk about tonight's list?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Cool. All right, everybody, we're going to take a quick break and we'll be right back.
And now for the top five.
All right, Peter, this was your pick. Why don't you explain what we're doing tonight? And I say it with the sarcasm because I feel like now we've crossed the bridge of no going back to this world for top fives, but we can talk about that. Go ahead.
That's actually interesting. There's honestly not too much to say about this pick. Last week we did our top five favorite Disney villains. That was your pick, Drew. And so I hit you back with the top five Disney heroes. This list was actually kind of your idea, to be honest, because I remember when you pitched the villains list, you were kind of like, so yeah, I mean, I guess our next one could be top five Disney heroes. And I was like, you know, writing it down. I don't have to come up with a pick for next week. But yeah, we're talking about our top five favorite Disney heroes. So, you know, we've already done our top five favorite sidekicks. We've already done our top five favorite Disney princesses. So it's not necessarily, I feel like heroes are all the characters who don't fit into those camps. So like, for example, you could be talking about Aladdin. You could be talking about the Beast. You could be talking about Prince Charming. Not to like spoil anybody's picks, but it's basically any of the good characters from Disney that aren't, you know, that aren't sidekicks and aren't princesses. So that's pretty much it. I think this will be a fun list. I had a pretty easy time with it, but I think I did dig up some of my favorite characters. So that'll be fun to talk about. But honestly, the beauty of our podcast, whether, you know, people think there's beauty in our podcast or not, I think the beauty of it is you can always think of more things to talk about. So yeah, we've kind of done a full run through on so many aspects of Disney as a movie production studio, but I feel like there's still probably something you could come up with Disney, whether it's your top five Disney songs or your top five Disney, I don't know. There's always something more to talk about in the world of entertainment, at least as far as I'm concerned. But yeah, where are you sitting with this list? Did you have a hard time putting this one together, Drew?
No, I actually found this list easier than the villains list. So
okay, nice.
It was really quick. Two names got put down really fast, and then after Googling just to make sure I didn't like miss anything, I was like, Oh yeah. You're just writing it down as you go.
Sure.
So yeah, I found it way easier than the other one. And then it was a little basis, there was a little bit of the basis of rewatchability or, you know, that kind of thing. But at the same time, you know. Yeah.
So, yeah, that's a good thing to say. What I kept finding myself come back to is certain characters that I identify with, because there's certain Disney movies that like I love, but maybe I don't identify with the main character as much as like other ones. So that's something that I was looking at a lot, as well. But yeah, I have two honorable mentions. I'm not sure where you're sitting with this one.
I also have two honorable mentions. Oops, I got to change screen for the, put the spreadsheet up. So yeah, man, I guess I got to go first, don't I?
Yeah. I mean, sounds good.
So this is the one, I'm going with Mulan because I've never really felt that she fell into the princess category in any way whatsoever. And, she's more of the hero in this movie and altogether. I really like that movie, but I just always felt she never really fell in the princess category. I know she's categorized that way, but I never felt that way. I was always like more of the, she's the hero and that's just how it is. So yeah, there you go.
Fair enough. I think I picked Mulan. I might have picked Mulan for my top five Disney princesses. And I agree, she's not really a princess. Like when you watch the movie, she isn't. But I think she's just been marketed that way. And she's kind of been kind of like an honorary entry into the princess camp. But
Clear. You got to go back and listen to that episode, and I can quickly look up the episode number if everyone wants me to, so they can go back and take a look. However, there's rules to what makes you a Disney princess, and she falls into the category of why she was nominated or not. She was included in the list of princesses. However, if you look at the fact that she wasn't royalty, she didn't marry into royalty, all that stuff, she's by definition not a princess. So. Just saying.
Yeah, that's kind of what I was saying, like, not necessarily with the technical terminology or whatever, but just that, like, she's technically not, like, based on the story, she's not a princess, but she is, like, within the Disney's rules or whatever, she has that rank. I always considered it more of a marketing thing, but I do understand that there's, like, the specific rules for why somebody's a princess or why they aren't. But yeah, Mulan, honestly, I did not pick her for this list, and I think it might be because I might have picked her for that previous Disney princess list. I'm not sure off the top of my head. I kind of wish I picked her for this list, though, because Mulan is one of my absolute favorite Disney movies. I think it's a beautiful film. It's awesome. It's a great, like, battle movie. Like, it's a great war movie, which I really loved when it first came out, you know, because I was at the age where I wasn't able to watch things like Braveheart or whatever else, and like Mulan was like as good as it got for me at that time, so it was awesome. But yeah, good pick. I love Mulan. This is a great pick. So
before we go any farther, Disney princess, if anyone wants to go back into our archive, we are currently on episode 365 for tonight, but we did Disney princesses on episode 301. So if anyone wants to go back and, you know, listen to that episode, there you go.
For sure.
So yeah, man, what's your honorable mention?
Yeah, so my first one, I actually went with Hiro Hamada from Big Hiro 6. And Hiro is basically he's kind of like the main character of Big Hiro 6. But, you know, he's this kid who's kind of like, he's kind of a genius when it comes to science and specifically technology. But he's not interested, you know, his older brother is going to like school, like he's going to the science school. And Hiro's not necessarily interested in that at the beginning. He's kind of more into like doing sort of like back alley robot fights and stuff like that. But through the tragic demise of his brother, he actually gets brought into the school and actually gets brought into this world of fighting crime. I really really like this character. This one kind of doesn't count because Big Hero 6 was actually technically a Marvel comic book before it was a Disney animated film. But I really love this movie as like a superhero movie. I think some of the concepts in it are really cool, especially the nanotech, like all the nanobots that Hero creates and then ends up being used by the villain of the film. I always thought that was like such a cool sort of when it comes to like a superhero sci-fi plot point. Like, I always thought that was a really clever way to set that up. So yeah, Big Hero 6, I love the movie. This one kind of falls in honor as an honorable mention for me, though, just because this technically, I mean, well, it's hard to say because Disney pulls from different source material so much, but this one's technically like a comic book pick first and foremost, and that's why it sits on this weird in-between line for me, you know what I mean?
No, I'm totally with you. I honestly, I wasn't even thinking when I was Googling and stuff, Baymax kept coming up in the Big Hero 6 world. And I was like, yeah, okay, whatever. And I just kind of skipped over, but there's a lot of really great characters within the Big Hero 6 universe. And it makes me irritated a little bit that I did not think of Big Hero 6 when we were talking villains, because that guy was cool. Even if it was for an honorable mention or something, that guy was cool. So.
And Baymax, I kind of wonder if he's more so a sidekick in Big Hero 6. So that's another debate you can have. But no, I love this movie, and I think it's kind of underrated. Like, it was really big when it came out, but I feel like people don't talk about Big Hero 6 enough anymore. So there's that. But yeah, what do you got for us next?
All right, so I'm going with Jack Skellington for my next honorable mention. Nightmare Before Christmas is a fantastic movie. This is an honorable mention. It's, in a way, it's not a Disney film. That's the only reason he doesn't make the final cut. But he's a unique hero in the sense that he kind of starts out as a bad guy. Well, how about this? The movie starts and you're like, this is clearly the hero of the movie. And then he takes Christmas away. And you're just like, well, crap, he's the bad guy. But then he has to be the hero in the end. It's almost like a perfect hero's journey, if you will, through that story in a very unique way of telling it. He's also got a cool art design. He's got the musical chops too, right? And he lives and like Halloween Town's awesome in general. Definitely someplace I want to visit, to be completely honest. but the movie itself, it's just a really great movie. I just think that unique blend of him, you're just like, all right, here's our main character. And then, ooh, he is not a good dude. And then he becomes the hero, the way it all plays out, you know? So
yeah, absolutely. Keep going.
No, I was just saying, just because he doesn't, it's mostly because he's not really a Disney character. That's why he's going on the honorable mention category. So.
Yeah. And it's kind of hard to, it's kind of hard to do that distinction because there are some of these characters where it's like, I mean, I guess Nightmare Before Christmas is a Disney movie, but I see what you mean. Like, when it was originally developed, was like it developed for Disney, or was it kind of a independent thing that Disney ended up like, you know, funding and distributing and stuff? So that's an interesting debate. Jack Skellington, one of my favorite characters. This movie is awesome, and he does have that sort of Ebenezer Scrooge sort of story arc, you know, where he starts out as like, you know, like you said at the beginning of the movie, not necessarily a bad guy until he steals Christmas and kind of he kind of has like that sort of like he's kind of doing bad things, but not necessarily for the wrong reasons. And then he has to step in at the end to become a hero. So I like everything you pointed out. But yeah, I kind of see why this makes an honorable mention. But yeah, this is a great pick nonetheless. So,
yeah. All right, man, what's your second honorable mention?
Yeah, so my next one, I actually went with the Goof Boy. I went with Max Goof from most known from A Goofy Movie, but also the Goof Troop cartoon series. Anybody
is that his last name? Is that his last name for real?
Yeah, yeah, actually.
All right.
Which is kind of weird because does that mean Goofy's last name is Goof? Is he Goofy Goof? I'm not really sure, but
you know what? No. That would make sense, and it actually sounds really well as it rolls off the tongue. Anyway, go ahead. I love this movie. I love the first one. I'm not a fan of the second, and it's mostly because of the voice actors and everything changed. But I really liked the first one.
Yeah, a lot changed about the second one. The second one also fell. I think the first one's kind of this timeless road trip movie about like a father and son. And the second one really feels pretty tropey when you think about like the early 2000s when it came out. And of course, it's got to be about the X Games. Like, X Games is hot right now. That's what the movie has to be about, right? But no, yeah, the right, first Goofy movie is like this masterpiece. And I was going to say, anybody who listens to the podcast, it's no surprise this is one of my favorite movies of all time. So I had to pick Max. He's kind of the main character of this movie. But I think Max is like, this is a character who I looked up to and related to as a kid. And it's just one of those things growing older. He's not necessarily my favorite character anymore, but it is one of my favorite movies. And, you know, it's just getting older. You know, I probably relate to Goofy more nowadays, as sad as that is to say. But great film, great characters. I love it. So, yeah, there you go.
Nice. Yeah, no, I love this movie. Max is fantastic. And you were definitely cheering him on more than any other character in that movie.
Right on, yeah.
Yeah, get the girl, man. At any rate, all right, so that goes back to my first actual pick of the night. I'm going with Chip and Dale. It's kind of a cheat because it's two, but they kind of go as a pair. First off, Rescue Rangers, man, I loved these cartoons growing up. The Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, the Nintendo game was awesome. It's Dale, right? He's got the Indiana Jones look. Is that right?
I couldn't tell you off the top of my head. Because
one of them has the Hawaiian shirt, which is Chip, and Dale's the one with the fedora and leather jacket. Now, what's really interesting about the Chip and Dale makeup, and I don't know if you ever spotted this before, but Harrison Ford is Indiana Jones, and Tom Selleck is Magnum P.I., and he wears the Hawaiian shirts. Well, Tom Selleck was almost Indiana Jones because he auditioned for the role of Indiana Jones. And he had a scheduling conflict with Magnum P.I., so he couldn't do the movie. And then Harrison Ford got the role. So when you look at Tom Selleck in the Hawaiian shirt and Indiana Jones in the fedora and the leather jacket, and then you look at Chip and Dale, it makes me wonder if that was Disney's poke at, hey, it's Magnum P.I. and Indiana Jones.
right.
I always thought that was kind of interesting. However, I always liked these just... Chip and Dale were always great. I was always excited to see them, even if like crossover stuff where it was like they weren't like in the usual outfits and solving crimes and saving people and stuff, but they were just, you'd put them in like a background of like a Christmas special or something like that, and they'd have like a little aside moment. I always liked those characters. Sure. But yeah, dude, the Rescue Rangers cartoons, just awesome. And yeah, I don't know what else to say about them. They were just a lot of fun. And I have a lot of, this is that nostalgic childhood memory stuff. So.
Yeah, absolutely. I loved Rescue Rangers. I think it's like that cartoon was airing when I was so young. I don't have a lot of specific memories of it besides just like, I loved the show. You know, I thought it was great. And that Nintendo game, the NES game for Rescue Rangers, it's one of the best Nintendo games. It's such a classic. The only thing I didn't like about that game is when you're playing with like your older cousin or your friend and they're like a little bit better than you and they end up picking you up because, like, you know, whether you're playing as Chip or Dale, you're able to pick up the other character and then you can basically just carry, you know, they can just carry you through the level and you're basically just sitting there doing nothing. So that was always pretty tedious. But no, Rescue Rangers is great. I always liked, I don't know if it's Chip or Dale, but the one who has the more Indiana Jones look, like you were saying, I always thought that was the cooler one when I was a kid, but that just might have been the age I was at, you know.
I think it was the age I was at too, because the one in the Hawaiian shirt was always the comic relief, if you will.
Yep.
So, yep. Yeah. Anyway, what do you got for me, man?
Yeah, my first pick I can keep pretty short. I actually went with Jack Skellington from Nightmare Before Christmas. And like you said, should this one count as an official Disney character? Well, I mean, when it comes to like copyright issues and stuff, he does, so he totally counts. But Nightmare Before Christmas, this is one of my favorite movies of all time. So yeah, there you go.
Nice. Cool. All right, time to go live action route. I'm going with Will Turner, Pirates of the Caribbean. Mm. Cool. When you Google heroes, Will Turner in the Realm of the Pirates of the Caribbean stuff does not come up. It's Jack Sparrow that comes up. But, and I know, I feel like this is sacrilege to say, but I know a lot of people will argue that, well, of course, because Jack Sparrow is the main character of those movies. If you watch the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie, and actually, if you watch the first three Pirates of the Caribbean movies, Jack Sparrow is not the main character. Will Turner and Elizabeth Swann are the lead roles in those movies. Jack Sparrow is the supporting character. I'm not saying he's not a hero. I'm just saying Will Turner is the main character in the first Pirates of the Caribbean movie. He's the adventure, and then Jack Sparrow's like the Han Solo. He's the sidekick, if you will.
Yeah.
But Will Turner, like, it's the call to adventure, man. You find out about the past and all that stuff, but he's a fun character. He's the swordsman. He's in love with the girl. He's got to go get the girl. He's got to save the day. He had a whole different level of ambitions, and he had Jack Sparrow to kind of guide him through the world, if you will. I always liked the character because it took me back to the idea of the romanticized deal of it. Three Musketeers, Princess Bride, stuff like that. The hero with the heart of gold. And he's going to do everything. He's going to do whatever's right to save the day and help the people he cares about and all that stuff. I always liked that about him. And that's like he was the character. You're just like, yeah, dude, that's where I identify with. You know what I mean? Nothing wrong with Jack Sparrow. Just Will Turner is where I, you know. Yeah. Anyway, there you go. But that's why I went with him. So
I think Will Turner is a cool character, too, because he has like those blacksmithing skills. You know, he is able to actually like build the weapons that he's fighting with and stuff. And there's the part in the first Pirates movie where it's like the first time that Jack Sparrow and Will Turner kind of face off, and it's in the blacksmith shop, and Jack Sparrow makes a comment that like Will Turner's too busy studying swordplay, he needs to find a girl or something. But I think that kind of shows like Will Turner is such a skilled fighter, and Captain Jack Sparrow, like, he's a skilled fighter too, but he's also busy, you know, drinking rum and getting into other shenanigans and stuff. And Will Turner's much more of a focused academic sort of fighter, which, I mean, did they ever show like who was the better swordsman? I'm not really sure, but if I had to put
They did have the one sword fight between the two of them, but it was kind of, Jack Sparrow did kind of cheat a little bit. So there you go.
Yeah, I feel like in a fair fight, I might put my money on Will Turner is kind of what I was getting at, though. So good stuff. Great pick.
Yeah. All right, man. What do you got for me?
Yeah. With all that being said, I did not expect we were going to have this debate on the show. And even though I said that, like, I think Will Turner might be a better fighter, I actually did go with Captain Jack Sparrow for one of my picks.
Yeah. All right.
So, this is one of those ones where this came down to a character who's stuck with me through the years, who I relate to, who I dressed as him for Halloween like a couple years ago. But I love Captain Jack Sparrow. I think he's so entertaining. Drew, you have some good points. He could fall into more of a sidekick camp, especially for, I would say, the first two movies. I mean, the third movie, it's hard to say because they literally like brought him back from the dead, so to speak, you know, so it's like, would they go that far for just a sidekick? But in my defense with this character, in the movies after Pirates 3, he definitely becomes the main character of those films, at least for a couple of them. So like Captain Jack Sparrow starts as a side character, ends up taking up the main role. Now, once he becomes, you know, once he is in the main role, do those movies get better? I mean, not necessarily, but I still like the character enough that he'll make my list. So I love Captain Jack Sparrow. He's such a fun ragtag sort of character. So I'm sure I'll mention him on the podcast again. But yeah, I don't know if you have any thoughts on this one, Drew. I feel like we've probably been talking about
just that we've already talked about. And like, you know, like I said, Jack Sparrow is a great character. He's a great hero. For sure. It's just when I was looking at the movie and I was like, you know, it's not like, here's the thing. I couldn't pick Princess Bride. That's not a Disney movie. I couldn't pick, you know, technically, I mean, yeah, Disney made a Three Musketeers film, but that's not really their thing. You know what I mean? It really begged the question of where that comes from. And that's why I was like, well, they got pirates and Will Turner's the guy, you know, like he's the hero in this. So,
well, that's why I stopped in my track. Cause I was like, you know, Hiro Hamada is not a Disney character. He's a Marvel character. But then I was like, well, Cinderella is not really a Disney character either. You know, like Disney's thing is kind of taking from source material. So it's kind of interesting where you draw that line. You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. And it is, that is an interesting, that is a huge, interesting part of it is where you draw. So there you go. Mm-hmm. All right. My next character is the danger that flaps in the night. I went with the Darkwing Duck. Let's be real, man. It's Disney's Batman in the DuckTales universe.
Yeah.
Darkwing Duck is fantastic. I actually like that was the thing. Like, first off, we all watch DuckTales. Let's be real. DuckTales is fantastic. Everyone jumped on board with that one. And then you threw in. And then you're just like, you're watching DuckTales one day, and then you're like, wait a minute, there's a Batman character in this? And he's got a cool outfit, and he's got the costume, he's got the car, he's got, like, it's like a sillier version, but this is fantastic. Dude, Darkwing Duck's amazing. That's that thing. It's just literally, and I'm picking him solely on the idea of the nostalgia of it, and then, yes, throw in the fact that it's basically Disney Batman, if you will. So right there you on. Go.
Yeah, I wasn't sure if you're going to pick this one, but Darkwing Duck's awesome. This is one of those picks where like I love the character. I think he's like he's got a really striking, like super cool look. I have super fond memories of the cartoon, but this is one of those ones that I just haven't watched in so long. And as much as like I have such fond memories of it, it's hard for me to comment a lot besides like, yeah, I really enjoyed watching this back in the day. All that being said, I wonder, Darkwing Duck has got to be on Disney Plus, right? I've never even, you know, looked that up.
It might be on there, but I do know. So when my kid was younger, he did watch a little bit of the newer DuckTales. And I do know that they eventually did get to Darkwing Duck territory. And then he started watching old DuckTales, which he seemed to like better than the newer ones. And he did dabble a little bit with Darkwing Duck, but not much. So I was like, oh, man, you're going to get the Darkwing Duck. And I think it seemed more like a push than anything else. So
with everything I know, it's probably one of those things that I'll put it on the TV to see if the kid will get into Darkwing Duck at all. And he just won't care for it. And then I'll just walk away and be sad. That's happened a number of things already. But good stuff.
What the hell is this? Put the other thing back on. All right, man, what do you got? What's your next one?
Yeah, for sure. So I've got a couple picks that I feel like we might match on, but I'll go with one that I doubt will match on. And it's actually kind of funny when you look at my heroes list. I picked a lot of ones that correspond with some of the villains that I picked for last week. But I'll get it out of the way. I went with Ralph from Wreck-It Ralph. Or if you want to just call him Wreck-It Ralph, that works. But this is one of my favorite characters. It's one of my favorite Disney animated movies, especially like in the newer like CG animated movies. But it's also just like I love going to arcades. I love old school video games. So of course I'm going to love this one. But I really like Ralph as a character. He's so like he feels so out of place in the world. And I really like how he's like. He's both like this really heartwarming sort of character, but he's also like kind of the muscle. Like he's this big burly guy who's kind of just lost. And I find his story like very endearing outside of like the video game nerdy stuff. But you throw in the video game nerdy stuff on top of it. And it's just like such a fun, like cool character. So I just love Wreck-It Ralph. This is another one that I feel like I go off on a Wreck-It Ralph diatribe every couple of weeks on the show. So I'll probably mention this one again, but that's my next pick. So there you go.
Yeah. Good call. Ralph is fantastic. Ralph's great because I feel like he's the, what's the word I want to use? He's the unlikely hero, I guess, the best way of wording it.
Yeah.
In the sense that we like not the unlikely hero. Like, look, he's the title character. You know, he's going to be the main part of the show and we're going to follow him along. But he's the hero that he doesn't know he could be. Right.
Yeah.
Like he's not looking to, he's like, you know, I do the bad stuff. That's who I am. Right. And he's like, and he goes to therapy, for it. And he's, you know, with all the rest of the guys, and he goes to the, Tapper game bar. I forget what the name of that is.
I think it's just called Tapper. I want to say
it honest. Might be Tapper, but yeah, he goes in the video game bar, which that's a funny video game by itself. Just like when you like put that in perspective, yeah. But yeah, man, good stuff. Ralph is a great character, and I really liked. I love that aspect of the game, that how the games are connected to each other and the whole world that they put together there. The thing that kind of blew me away, and I think you've talked about this before, is the Surge Protector, train station, if you will. Like, yeah. it's just brilliant, you know? So,
yeah, absolutely. And then not to change the subject from that, but you are pointing out some stuff that, I think is really good to think about with this character is like, he is a misfit. Like you said, he's an unlikely hero. He's a misfit. And I think that's one of the reasons why I find this character so endearing is he's not Prince Charming, you know, he's kind of the big awkward dude that doesn't know where he fits in. And I think that's why that story touches me really well, you know, maybe compared to like more of a Prince Charming sort of character that has everything together. I think that's why I think Ralph is so relatable. But sure. Yeah. What do you got next for us?
All right. I'm going the Tangled route and I'm jumping on Flynn Rider for this one.
Nice.
Flynn Rider, he's Han Solo, man. He's Wesley. You got that Princess Bride aspect to it where he's going to help the girl. He's going to fall in love with her and everything. He's going to help the girl, but he's got that Han Solo style, like smugness, which is just great. And, he's a ragtag, unlikely hero kind of thing. And when he puts, you know, when you put the puzzles all together, he's a good guy in the end. And, he's gonna, you know, be there and save the day. But you could tell as you started watching the movie, you're just like, this guy's great right off the bat. And then he gets a great voice actor. I mean, Zachary Levi is fantastic. But then I really like his side stories. Like he's essentially a villain. I mean, he's a thief, right? Like a master thief. So think about like the side adventures that probably happened pre-film, right? That's the part that I'm kind of curious about, like the expounded universe on that one. He's a thief, but yes, he's going to expand on that. So throw in the fact that even though he might do some good things, you know, where does that world take him? Is he like that Ocean's 11 kind of thief? I mean, not based on what we saw, it's a little bit more bumbling, but what underground networks has he got? What contacts are out there? I feel like I'm building a Dungeons and Dragons campaign as I discuss it, but you know. So there you go.
Awesome. Yeah, this is a great character. My favorite memory with Flynn, to be honest, is I think it was back when the M. Night Shyamalan... This is going to sound weird, but it's listen to where I'm going here. I think it was back when the M. Night Shyamalan Avatar movie came out. You know, that atrocity came out. But me and one of my college roommates from my apartment, you know, we're like huge nerds. So, you know, you got to go see the Avatar movie. So I went to see that movie in that live action movie with him. And I want to say it was that movie. They had a Tangled trailer before it. And there's that one great moment where you might know the line better than me, Drew, but where Flynn's like, you got to hit him with the smolder or whatever.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you're pretty close there, but yeah.
Where there's that moment where he's talking about you got to hit him with the smolder. And then it has like he like looks down and he looks up and he's got kind of this sort of like pouty face and he's like going for the mysterious eyes and stuff. And I just remember that visual. And me and my buddy, who are both like early 20s, like college age kids, just bust out laughing. And that's, I think, a testament to how good Flynn is as a character, but also how good Tangled is, too, where you have these two like college age guys who are actually just laughing their asses off this goofy smolder joke. But it was so good. But no, I love Tangled. I think this is a great character. And Tangled is like it. There's a lot of twists in the movie. It's a really good story. And I think Tangled over a lot of newer Disney animated stuff really it really feels classic Disney when it comes to their classic animated films. And I don't know why that is. Like, it could be subject matter, but I think a lot of it's execution. Like, it has that classic Disney warmth that you want. So definitely a good pick with this one. So,
yeah. All right, man. What do you got? Second to last pick.
Yeah, second to last pick. I actually went with The Beast from Beauty and the Beast. And this is a pick. I always loved The Beast. First of all, Beauty and the Beast, amazing film. Like, it's just it's an amazing feat of animation and cinematography. But I always loved The Beast because he's one of those characters who they portray him as, like, at certain parts of the movie, they portray him as being so dark and so scary and so powerful. Like, there's moments where it's legit scary, you know, where Belle, like, ends up, you know, going to this mysterious castle in the woods, and there's a lot of, like, gothic horror elements when it comes to the imagery.
Yeah, and this is the one where the girl is kidnapped and held captive until Stockholm Syndrome catches in, and she...
and fair enough, but I think, like, a lot of my favorite stories do have those, like, messed up backstory aspects to them. So, like, I wasn't necessarily
going to go into... My favorite stories are the ones where the girl gets kidnapped and...
Well, it's not that, and I wasn't going to comment on Stockholm Syndrome.
I'm just teasing. I'm just messing with you, man.
But it's like, for me, it's kind of like, you know, Willy Wonka, the beautiful family film, is actually about this, like, crazy guy who invites, you know, six or five kids to his chocolate factory, and most of them get, you know, brutally injured in some weird way. You know, it's not really that nice of a story when you look under the surface. And I think Beauty and the Beast is kind of the same way, where there's, like, that weird Stockholm Syndrome aspect. I wasn't necessarily going to go into that, but just, like, the aspects of, like, the weird gothic horror aspects to the imagery, the moments where the beast seems really powerful, like the part where he fights off all the wolves, certain parts, like his voice, like there's almost like jump scares in there. But there's also the parts of the movie where he seems really dorky, you know, the parts where, you know, he's trying to look good for Belle when they have, like, their famous dance scene, and he's getting ready and he has, like, all the, like, curlers in his hair, and it just looks super goofy. Or, like, if you think about, like, the snow fight sequence and how, like, charming and heartwarming he seems there. And I think that's what I'm trying to get at, is this is a character that has such range. And in one scene can seem so powerful and terrifying, and the next scene can seem like this big fluffy puppy dog. And I really love the way they were able to pull that off through the music and the voice acting and the character design. So yeah, this is one of my favorite characters, but it is a lot of that sort of, like, classic monster story aspects that I also really glom onto. So there you go.
Yeah. And then the only thing that I never really liked about the Beast was, like, he was fine, but, like, when you get to the end, when but when you get to the end, when he transforms back to a human, you're just like, man, you couldn't have, like, made him, like, you guys are drawing this, right? You guys could have made him way more attractive looking. He's got, like, the largest nose in the history of all of animation. And I'm like, what? Like, they, okay, like,
I have multiple, like, female friends who've told me that, like, they were disappointed when he turned into a human and they preferred his appearance as a beast, which I think is pretty funny. But I think that goes into that cartoony character design sort of stuff, so sure. That's hilarious. But no, you've got a good point. Like, he had so much more, he had such more aura as the beast than he did as a human, so.
Yeah, I don't. all right, man. We're jumping on to my final pick of the evening. And this is in the realm of how we've kind of been discussing it, is that, like, if, like, we've mentioned characters that are not technically Disney characters because of where they originally come from, but they still come from Disney movies. So, like, for example, like Cinderella, you mentioned that, like, she's technically not a Disney character,
right?
Yeah. But essentially she is. She has her movie. They made a Disney movie. But so that's where I'm kind of, like, falling on the sword here of, like, hey, I got to pick one of those guys that, you know, that kind of thing. But I'm going with Robin Hood. I'm not talking about any live action. I'm talking about Robin Hood, the fox. Yeah. I absolutely love the Robin Hood movie. Top to bottom, it's one of Disney's, in my opinion, finest films. Robin Hood is the fox, you know, you got Baloo the bear, you know, running through the forest, you know, fighting Sheriff Nottingham and his, you know, royal guards and the soldiers and stuff like that. It's just a fun, exciting movie. It's dark, it's funny, it's happy, it's sad, it's there's a lot to it. It does, in a revisit of that movie, it does have some pacing issues I never noticed when I was a kid, because I was just more entrapped in the story and everything.
Yeah.
But it does have some pacing issues that I feel don't age as well, but that's, you know, to each his own on that one. But
it's also like a 40 or 50 year old film, at least,
it
or
is
something.
Yeah,
so you do have
it
to
is.
Keep that in mind.
I know, but dude, this is one where I love the adventure, I love the excitement, I, you know, a little more sword fighting in my personal opinion, but it's such a good movie. Yeah, that's it, Robin Hood. It's great. So there you go.
Yeah, this is a great pick. This is one that I wasn't expecting you to pick, but I feel like I probably should have. It's a great film. Something about this Robin Hood movie, I feel like it... I know you're saying there's some pacing issues, but something about it feels, like, timeless to me. Like, it's kind of just, like, outside the realm of, like, weird tropes and trends. Like, it just feels like just a good story, you know, executed really well through, like, this anthropomorphic art. Were you going to say anything there, though, like, when I mentioned timelessness?
No, the timelessness, for sure. I'm just saying that as an adult, I'm understanding story structure better than when I was a kid.
Okay. Yeah.
And filmmaking techniques better. Some of the pacing feels like there's some spots where it feels like it gets a little slow. And maybe it's because they didn't put like music behind the scene, or maybe it's there's some tiny little things like that, but it comes down to behind the scenes stuff that they chose, decisions they made when they were making the movie that, made it be what it is. Nothing against it. It's still fantastic. I'm just, you know, for an example.
Yeah. I definitely hear you there. And this one would actually be fun to revisit and keep that in mind. But, I think this is a great movie, and, it's kind of funny, talking about like this character or like Max from a Goofy movie, like I mentioned earlier. I was kind of thinking like, man, Disney needs to do like a good, like, anthropomorphic movie. Like, I feel like they haven't done any with just like animals as like the main characters. And then I thought of Zootopia and I'm like, okay, never mind, it was there all along. But yeah, that classic like anthropomorphic Disney artwork is like super fun. So yeah, good stuff.
I think they should do a, careful when I say updated, but like, let's do Robin Hood, but let's, you know, bring it to like a little bit more modern storytelling. I mean, they could definitely bring it, like bring the excitement a little bit more, but let's like remake that movie shot for shot with like updated graphics. How about that? Maybe add a little bit more, but update that movie. Yeah.
Yeah. Also, like I've mentioned it before, and this isn't Disney, but like watch the last, like the most recent Puss in Boots movie, and then imagine like Disney doing like a 3D Robin Hood movie. Like there's some really cool stuff they can do when it comes to like parkour, or even like some of the sort of like Attack on Titan techniques that the Puss in Boots movie stole and stuff. Like Disney could do a really cool Robin Hood movie. Like I'm just imagining that character like gliding through the treetops, or like gliding across the castle roofs, and I think it could be like really something special. So call.
All right, man, what's your final pick of the night?
Yeah, my final pick, I actually went with Aladdin, you know, you know, Riff Raff, Street Rat, I don't buy that, that's my last pick. But Aladdin, here's the thing, is thinking of this question, like your favorite Disney heroes, Aladdin is honestly the first one I pick, and Drew, you and I have talked so much about like, you know, really loving this movie on this podcast. And this movie came out at a time, like I remember I was like first or second grade when Aladdin came out. And like growing up, like I loved Snow White and Cinderella and those movies. But, you know, I love the animation, I love the fantasy setting. But, you know, I'm like a kid who's also into like Power Rangers and Batman. And, you know, I'm watching these Disney movies and I'm like, man, I would kill for like a sword fight or like, you know, something like that. And I feel like Aladdin delivered in a way that like as a little boy, I could relate to this movie so much more than like a lot of the other Disney movies that I had seen before, because it just felt cool and it felt action packed and I could just relate to the characters. And Aladdin is just like a really cool story. It has such a cool setting. It has such a cool magical fantasy element to it in a different way. You know, it's not like a European fantasy like most of the other Disney movies before it. It's like a new, you know, it comes from Arabian Nights. It comes from a different part of the world. And it just felt so fresh when I saw this movie. And I think it's a beautiful film. And I just always really loved Aladdin as this character who starts as, like I said before, like this street rat. He starts as this like common thief and then works his way up to becoming, you know, works his way into the palace. You know, obviously there is a genie involved in all that and stuff, but no, it's just a great movie, great character, great villain. Like we talked about Jafar last week, but it really comes down to, when I think of my favorite Disney heroes, Aladdin's the first character I think of, so he had to make my list. So yeah,
he made my short list in the sense that he like almost was right there. Like, I loved the Aladdin film for a very, very long time. It was absolutely one of my favorites. I mean, I know if I went back and looked at our when we did those episodes, we were like, what are your favorite Disney movies? I know Aladdin, I'm pretty sure Aladdin made my list. I'd have to double check it, but like it's fantastic. I absolutely love it. However, I was just like, when I was putting the list together, I was like, this is going to be a tough one. And he got edged out. So sorry, Aladdin. But dude, I'm with you. It's a great story. And when you throw in the, and this is another hero's journey thing. This is that thing where he was handed the sword and he picked it up, yep. You know? And he took the step into the bigger universe and took the step to go on the journey, and he had to learn, makes mistakes and learn and grow. It's a true hero's arc, which is fantastic. And then he's got to double down in the end and keep his promise to the genie. You know, as much as he wants the girl, as much as he wants to fix everything, and genie's like, dude, you can have that. And he's like, nope, I gotta abide by my word. And he's incredibly honest, and you know, he's a good dude, right?
So, yeah, that's a good thing to point out, actually, like the honesty that he has to fall back on. And like, even though he has the ability, he has the power to take advantage of the situation, he chooses to be a good, honest person in the end. And yeah, that's a really good thing to point out. So good stuff.
Yeah. All right, man. Well, that brings us to the end of this list. I got to give you the what are we doing next week topic. So next week, I'm hitting you with an actor, because I'm kind of like, I feel like we need to look at actors more and like kind of, you know, be a little more niche with that. So yeah. We're going to do Sylvester Stallone next week. And
okay.
You'd think to yourself, didn't we do that? No, we have not. So there you go. So yeah, Sylvester Stallone, do some action films from the 80s and 90s. Like, this should be fun. This should be a fun conversation. So
I'm just trying to think of how many Expendables movies can I round out my list with. No, this will be super fun. And just related to the Expendables, like Sylvester Stallone is an actor who's been in like masterpieces. Like if you look at some of the Rocky films and stuff, but he's also been in a lot of like fun popcorn flicks too. So this will be a fun list to go through.
Yeah. Well, we've done Schwarzenegger, so I think it's about time we do Stallone. So
absolutely.
Yeah. All right. You want to toss this episode in the can?
Yeah, let's go for it.
Cool. All right, everyone, do us all a favor, check out our website, top5report.com. There you'll find links to all of our social media, as long as link to our email, top5report@gmail.com. We are on Apple Podcasts, iHeartRadio, Stitcher, Amazon Audible. You can subscribe to us in those places. If you do, you will not miss a single episode. You can also leave us a review. We love those 5 stars, but we understand criticism because it helps us get better and it makes the words we say feel important. You can follow me personally on Twitter and Instagram at Drew3927. Peter, what about you?
Yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at NinjaPierre, and that's where I'll be reminding you that I'm not a hero. I'm a mere defender of the office. You know who's a hero? Hero from Heroes. That's a hero. Also, Bono.
Wow. Okay. Well, for the top five report, I'm Drew.
I'm Peter.
And we'll see you next week. Thanks for listening.